Everybody is ready to welcome America back to the Jersey Shore this summer, and so am I. Now, 7 months later, we know this, that we've made great progress, but that we still have so much more to do.
Hello, New Jersey! Since the storm hit, we've provided billions of dollars to families and state and local governments across the region, and more is on the way.
All right, the bromance continues between Obama and Chris Christie, and we continue here on America Tonight. How you doing, America, after a long weekend? Maybe some of you were at the Jersey Shore. Things have turned around a little bit there after Hurricane Sandy ripped through north, south, and central New Jersey. One of the hardest hit places had to be along the northern area of the shoreline. That's where most of the damage was caused. The state has a $25 million marketing campaign to highlight the fact that we are open for business. It kind of reminded me of what happened on the Gulf Coast after the BP oil spill. They still have those commercials running, and they had them also after Hurricane Katrina, that, hey, we're here, folks, and they're doing the same thing in Jersey. So there they were again, touring the area, looking to see what's changed. The fact that there was a 5.5-mile ceremonial ribbon that tied together some of the hardest-hit towns of Sandy, which that's a pretty good idea. And then they've got this campaign that's rolled out to try to tell people that they can come back. But see, what I think is $38 billion in damages in the state. 360,000 homes or apartments that were ripped apart. Tourism is a $40 billion industry there because of the shoreline. What I think to be worried about is future storms. And, okay, so you're rebuilding, but what's the difference this time around? What if another disaster strikes? What if another hurricane-like storm flows through that New Jersey northern area, southern area, or even in between? How do they bounce back from that? Boy, FEMA has got to be barren. With all the storms that we've dealt with between Katrina to Rita to the tornadoes, 2011, Joplin, Missouri, Moore, Oklahoma, the latest, Superstorm Sandy. I mean, how much money is there left to pay for all this storm damage? The federal government has directed $14 billion so far to help families, rebuilding, all that kind of stuff, transportation, reconstruction, the things that would normally go on, to states that have been affected by Katrina, and the rest, the bulk of it, going to New Jersey and New York. So the president was touring, meeting homeowners, businesses, people who have benefited from the recovery. What about the people who haven't? I wonder what they have to say when they look at that and hear the president and Christie going on and on. And somebody said to me, how much of the Republican vote do you think Chris Christie will get in 2016 if he continues to pal around with this president? And the answer is maybe the president is actually helping Hillary Clinton. You know, there's a super PAC that's already formed to raise money for Clinton's run in 2016, even though they're acting as though she's not going to run. The Clintons are acting as though she's not going to run. Don't be surprised if her health is good that she does, because if they're already really pumping this up behind the scenes, I don't know, I have a feeling that she'll be back in there again. And what if it was Clinton and Christie? However, I think the Republican bench is deeper than Christie, and I think a lot of conservatives are not going to go for him, even if his approval ratings are off the charts. So he'd have to do a lot of tap dancing and convince a whole lot of people. Coming up in this hour, We're going to talk to a guy who can teach you how to tap dance. You know, DWIs, this is the season for DWIs, road traps, speed traps, that kind of thing, because it's summertime. That's what Memorial Day also ushers in, the official start of the summer. So we've got an attorney in the wings who we talked to before who's just terrific in telling you things to avoid for some reason, even if people are completely innocent. For some reason, when they get pulled over by the cops, they feel compelled to just dribble out all this information, realizing, of course, that they're stacking the deck often against themselves when they're talking about prescriptions they're taking or other things. So Mark Stevens, who is an expert in DWI, tells us what's it like when you get pulled over, things to avoid, and things that he has seen happen in the courtroom, and some of the trends when it comes to driving under the influence charges and whatnot. And of course, whenever there's a celebrity, the most recent one was Reese Witherspoon's husband, and then she got out and mouthed off to the police in Atlanta, and that made giant, you know, headlines. Anytime it's somebody famous, they're going to have the obligatory mug shots. You'll see them splayed all over the place in Gawker and wherever, and people will talk about it. But what about the people who aren't quite as famous that are getting pulled over? What's happening with them? And, you know, what's the how tough is it for the people who really haven't done anything but somehow find themselves in that predicament? All right, speaking of predicaments, I think the biggest predicament going on in Washington is how do we get through all these investigations by the end of the summer. So Benghazi hasn't died down. In fact, Congressman Daryl Issa is subpoenaing John Kerry for more Benghazi emails, deciding, all right, we're not going to let this go. You want us to let it go, but we're not going to. So we're bombarding you. We're coming back on Monday, and we're on the attack. We're not just going to say, okay, enough. You know, I'm the chairman of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, but it doesn't mean a hill of beans if we don't get to the bottom of it. So dump all your documents on us, and we'll decide if we're satisfied. Then you still have the IRS. You've got a new man at the helm of the IRS who is trying to tackle the problems, but now we'll have to answer as to some of the what's going on in the investigation, how it's developing. And, of course, you still have the Associated Press and the Department of Justice pouring over the phone records of reporters and editors looking for the leaks of what they say is classified information. But did they violate and trample on the First Amendment and the constitutional rights of a free press? And who answers for that? That would be the Attorney General, Eric Holder, who's rapidly losing a lot of fans on the Democratic side and the very liberal side. People who embraced this Attorney General, not so hot on him now, and I think the AP scandal was the one that probably takes him down. But it's all about these investigations. It's going to be a summer of investigations on Capitol Hill. Stay with us. Odds and Ends coming up on the flip side. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment frequent basis, but it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
Hi, this is Gary Cooper with Midas Resources Gold and Silver. Don't be surprised when the global elite confiscates money from your bank account one day. They have already very clearly telling you that they're going to do it. With what just happened in Cyprus serving as a blueprint for future bank bailouts, if you are concerned about keeping your money, why not consider storing your wealth in gold and silver? Call me, Gary Cooper, at 1-800-686-2237, extension 130. Together we'll discuss your options of buying gold and silver. Again, the global elite have plans for your money, and it doesn't include you. So call me, Gary Cooper, at 1-800-686-2237, extension 130, and I will send you a booklet with 10 reasons why gold and silver could be right for you. Again, don't get caught with money in your account when the next bank bailout hits. Call me, Gary Cooper, at 1-800-686-2237, extension 130.
Time and time again.
You need to come here and help us. We need assistance. Please.
Those we should be able to depend on let us down.
Federal and state and local officials saying help is on the way. Well, the folks here in Bell Harbor say show me.
Don't depend on the government to save you. Take action now so that you're prepared for the next disaster with MyPatriotSupply.com. Get the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Call 866-229-0927.
We are hurting down here, and we need help immediately.
Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Highest court. You're not going to believe this. If you ever worked as a waiter or waitress or just somebody who picks up the dishes, you're going to laugh your head off. We'll get to that in a second. First thing, though, is not a laughing matter. Topping odds and ends is this craziness at Rutgers where, listen, we've already pounded this into the ground. Rutgers obviously does not know how to hire someone at its top levels because why would you not vet someone properly? It's not that hard. For goodness sake, I guarantee most of you listening to my voice have probably been practically frisked in some of your job interviews for jobs that you can't believe that you've been asked some of the questions that you've been asked and drug tested and who knows what else you've had to go through. I've had that. I've had drug testing before in the past. I've had crazy, even though I was hired, crazy applications that had to be refilled out all over the place. And I would say, well, why are you wasting this paper? Here's the entire resume. Can check it out, references, whatever. It didn't matter. I still had to fill it all out. I had to watch a zillion videos when I worked for KOB in Albuquerque. I mean, that was just the way it was. You had to watch them, check them off from harassment to whatever else. And they definitely vetted me. They definitely vetted all the people that I worked with, no matter what position in the newsroom that they were in. So that's a small newsroom, right, in a big, medium-sized market. Rutgers is a huge state-run university that just got two black eyes because of the controversy over an aggressive and abusive men's basketball coach, Mike Rice, who ultimately was dumped but was paid off a huge amount of money. at the same time. An AD who ultimately was forced to resign, who was paid off a huge amount of money. So now they gotta find someone who is so squeaky clean, it's unbelievable. They turn to this Julie Herman, who has a big resume of working as an assistant athletic director in various universities, some big universities, started out as a coach, was a coach at Tennessee. Volleyball was her sport, and she was so abusive to players that she called them whores and alcoholics and made them do cockamamie things, wear clothes backwards. I mean, just pure nonsense. Where I know the people that listen to this show would have told her where to stick it. And these poor girls wanted their scholarships, wanted to play, and were really shook up and ended up, all 15 of them, signing a letter, trying to confront her, talking to her, sending a letter up the flagpole. She ended up quitting. So I guess she figured, well, that happened 15, 16 years ago. Nobody cares about that. This is a different day. And here's the thing. You could make the argument that, okay, maybe she was too intense and was crappy and had a rotten bedside manner and was just horrific as a coach. But in an athletic department, she totally was excellent and was able to reverse her earlier course. She'd have to own up to it, though. So she's saying, I don't know what letter you're talking about. I don't know that these players. So she's a pathological liar, I think, because I don't think 15 people agree on that. There's nothing in it for them. They're not going to gain anything. They're not gaining any money. They're not getting some publicity they're desperate to seek, so it doesn't make any sense. So here's how we fast forward the story. And by the way, I think we're going to throw her in the America Tonight jail. Days after the accusations of the verbal abuse and all that kind of stuff broke, it also was revealed that she was involved in a sex discrimination lawsuit at Louisville in 2008 when she was a senior athletics administrator. The New York Times wrote that story. Mary Banker, who was an assistant track and field coach at the time, said she told Herman about sexist behavior and discriminatory treatment by the head coach, but within 3 weeks of voicing her complaints, she was fired. So the lawsuit said that she was most responsible for that termination. Looking back on the legal filings and all that stuff, it shows that a jury originally awarded this Mary Banker $300,000 in emotional damages and lost wages, plus lawyer fees. But a Kentucky appeals court overturned the decision, saying she had an inability to prove retaliatory actions from the Louisville officials. Because retaliatory, which is big now, she'd have to prove that, okay, that's why they fired her. She'd have to have some kind of hard enough evidence, and I guess she didn't. But this is just another thing that's in her file of, whoops, didn't I tell you about that? It's a big deal, because what the lawsuit says is that after she complained, Herman called her into the office and told her, you shouldn't have gone to HR, and said, I don't know how I'm going to restore trust in you amongst the staff now. I don't know how you're going to work downstairs after this. And geez, she was fired just a few weeks later, even though the athletic department is saying, oh, no, we didn't like her performance, and that's why we did that. That's why she was fired. Give me a break. So I think Julie Herman is talking out of both sides of her mouth. Rutgers made a huge mistake. They need to correct it, and they might not correct it unless there's even more pressure. So I'm going to say, if nothing else, she's going to sit in our America Tonight jail. Do we have the dungeon?
This chamber has no windows and no doors.
Yeah, there you go. It just makes me feel better to do that, because I think this story is crazy. It needs to go away, and Rutgers needs to get their act together. They can ill afford to have another mistake here, and I don't see how they can stick with her, because how can you trust what she's saying? And especially with the pregnant woman, the story with the pregnant woman and her telling her, you know, she better watch out and all this stuff. And then the the kids that were in the volleyball team, they're not making it up, and I don't see how you dismiss that. They keep trying to stand behind it, but there's going to be more and more pressure, so I say adios. All right, tipping. Baristas, managers, you know where I'm going with this, right? Who calls himself a barista? The Starbucks clan. It's like a whole language and world unto itself. But New York City's high court is going to rule in a tip jar dispute that might have big consequences for the hospitality workers and other employees at the Starbucks chains all over the United States. Here's what the argument is. They're saying low-level workers are being pitted against assistant managers and the company over who is supposed to get the tips that the customers leave when they pick up their stuff, when they get their, you know, go in and order their whatever, they order their lattes or their coffees or their muffins or whatever it is. So a federal appeals court has asked the state court of appeals to try to figure out New York's labor law and its definition of an employer's agent who is prohibited from tip sharing in connection with the two lawsuits against Starbucks, which allows baristas and shift supervisors, not assistant managers, to dip into the tip jar. I mean, look, this is ridiculous. Why doesn't the company just clearly state who the tips are for in the first place and they don't get into this? But maybe they didn't think it was going to be such a big deal. How do you split this and decide who's important that's here in this Starbucks that's, you know, who's eligible for tip sharing? So you have hourly wage baristas who serve the customers. That's the face, and that's who I think the people are tipping. And then you have the assistant managers who are salaried, who want a piece of the action. In between that, the shift supervisors mostly serve customers. They get paid hourly and also share tips. So why do we care about this? Because I think it could be something that could be used in other cases, in other restaurants and other places. They could use it as case law and say, well, in New York, they ruled blah, blah, blah. It would affect 42,000 New York businesses statewide, 250,000 hospitality workers in New York City alone. It's very, very big, this decision. Huge decision. The attorney that represents the baristas says the shift supervisor should also be excluded from the tip jar since they make work assignments and have authority over the people who are the baristas and qualify as company agents. Maybe what you have to do is, if you go into a Starbucks and you like the person that's waiting on you, you want to give it to them, here, this tip is for you. Put it in your pocket. Craziness. All right, our attorney pal in the wings. We're talking about DWIs next.
Gardeners, here comes another growing season, but don't use last year's soil. Maximize yields in your survival garden with EM1 from Terraganics. EM1 is an organic soil conditioner, fertilizer amendment, and compost accelerant that provides a broad spectrum of beneficial microorganisms, enzymes, trace minerals, vitamins, and various organic acids. EM1 helps regulate the soil's pH level and its soil microbes, improving moisture retention and drought tolerance. Remember last year's dry conditions? EM1 from Terraganics is safe, chemical-free, and certified for use on all organic farms. It improves plant quality, size, color, flavor, and gives up to 20% more nutrient value in fruits and vegetables and greatly increases shelf life. And EM1 is so simple to use, just mix with water and apply. This year, prepare your crisis garden for maximum yields with EM1 from Terraganics.com. Order now at TerraGanix.com or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Terraganics, life's getting better.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
What's safer and cheaper than prescription drugs?
Glad you asked. The answer is Renovation Teas. Herbal remedies are much safer and much cheaper than prescription drugs. Taste great, and most importantly, herbal teas are effective and non-addictive. Renovation Tea is especially unique, and here's why. We spent years researching herbs and their beneficial properties. Renovation Teas uses only 100% organic, fair trade herbs. Our teas are blended towards specific ailments and health conditions, such as diabetes, blood pressure, anxiety, libido, detox, and much more. All Renovation Teas are formulated and hand-filled in Arkansas. Take care of yourself naturally, the way Mother Nature intended. Order Renovation Teas at renovationtea.com or call 870-784-3121. That's 870-784-3121. Renovation Teas. Renovate your health one bag at a time.
It's time to get real.
It's time to prepare.
Economic collapse.
Social unrest.
Natural disasters.
Government takeover.
UN takeover.
Are you ready?
Ready?
Ready? Get ready at the Social Prepper Trade Show in Dalton, Georgia.
June 6th, 7th, and 8th.
3 massive days to learn self-reliance and emergency preparedness. Exhibitors ranging from survival, solar, power, food, protection, guns, ammo, disaster preparation products, hunting, and much more. Seminars by Dr. Wallach, Robert Henry, Raymond Blake Hogshead, Trish Deer, Sandy Hall, Rick Austin, Survivor Jane, and more of our nation's experts on survival and preparedness.
Don't miss the Social Prepper Trade Show,
June 6th through 8th, Dalton, Georgia. For discount tickets, prize raffle, and info, go to socialprepper.com.
Enter code GCN for 50% online ticket discount purchase.
The Social Prepper Trade Show,
presented in part by GCN.
This message dares all fish oil consumers. Yes, many people now take fish oil supplements, but the makers of K48 Plus want you to know it's not what you consume, but how it is absorbed that counts. So we dare you to compare fish oil with K48 Plus. K48 Plus, an omega-3 powerhouse, is made with the highest grade and most potent dose of krill oil available, and is 48 times more easily absorbed than common fish oil. K48 Plus is both a remarkable anti-inflammatory as well as a powerful antioxidant. If you suffer from ailments such as diabetes, COPD, autism, arthritis, depression, migraines, lupus, Alzheimer's, glaucoma, joint pain, high cholesterol, memory loss, or Crohn's disease, you need to see the K48 Plus video at livepremium.net. That's L-I-V-E premium.net. Or please call 208-521-3601. That's 208-521-3601 and ask about K48 Plus. Restore hope, optimize health with K48 Plus.
From just the other day. Pete Sepp joins us now. He's from the National Taxpayers Union. He's the vice president. We're going to talk about some of the things that you might not have noticed from the other day that kind of slipped under the radar. The budget so late, 65 days late, as a matter of fact. You know, I had the little countdown here on America Tonight. Pete, welcome to the show. Thanks for hanging with us.
Great to be here. Yeah, 65 days late and about $5 trillion short.
What do you think? You know, we'll get into some specifics, but overall, the first thing that really sprang out at you when you looked at this proposed budget from the other day?
Actually, what sprang out at me was the number of recycled proposals. We keep hearing about bold new items in the president's budget, this chained CPI concept. Well, that's an old concept. It's certainly a new idea in the president's budget. And we have some more means testing of Medicare programs. I suppose you could call that an entitlement reform. But once you get beneath that superficial amount of detail, well, you get to a whole lot of proposals that have shown up in budget after budget after budget of this administration, namely tax hikes.
Yeah, and that's what we hate to hear because that's what we want to know. Here we are coming close to tax day, but then when all this kicks in, that's what you're thinking, taxes of all sorts in our lives. So this one hit me because somebody sent me a note about it right away, the federal estate tax. What's happening there? What's the difference there as part of the fiscal cliff deal? It kind of tweaked that, unfortunately, in the wrong direction.
Well, yes. What we wound up with in the fiscal cliff deal was not repeal of the death tax, which we were hoping for, not even keeping the death tax at the parameters that were in existence right before the fiscal cliff deal. Instead, Congress and the president decided to raise the rate from 35% to 40% and keep the exemption at $5 million, but index it for inflation so that the cost of living would not eat away at the value of that exemption. Not a great deal, but it could have been worse. And by worse, I mean now what the president is proposing to do, which is in 2019 undo that deal and say, let's have a 45% death tax rate and an exemption of just $3.5 million. I say just because that could very well not cover a lot of small businesses and medium-sized farms as well, and we could very well wind up in a situation where we have this industry once again arising of various accountants and strategies and the like to avoid the death tax. The problem with that is that's a deadweight loss to the economy. A lot of money spent on planning, trying to stay on the right side of that exemption and keep from having to pay the tax that could otherwise go into more productive pursuits. Or worse, maybe this will touch some businesses to the point where they can't stay intact. You get less tax revenue in the long run when those businesses are broken up and they no longer have tax-paying employees or profits.
Oh, yeah, not good. That 45, as you said, just adding it on, not at all what was expected, not at all.
No,
The other thing that is interesting and something that will affect everyone listening, you know, they always talk about the middle class, we're trying to save the middle class. But it turns out for anybody who's flying aviation-wise, they were seeing that they're going to try to raise more money by boosting, jacking up the passenger security fee. So what does that go up to and how much is that going to actually raise?
Yeah, this is called, of course, the passenger security fee. It's labeled a user fee. That's not really what it is. So what the administration's talking about is boosting it to a minimum of $7.50 each way. That doesn't sound like a lot of money, but then you have to consider that there are all kinds of taxes on airline tickets, an excise tax, an inspection fee if you're flying internationally, segment fees. It all adds up to a burden of more than 20% on a typical airline ticket. And so this would only worsen the pain. The whole proposal would probably raise about $26 billion over 10 years. Now, the administration says what we're doing here is trying to get the fees to more accurately reflect the costs of aviation security. Trouble is, 70% of that new money would go to the general fund of the federal budget. So this is not about aligning costs of security with fees. It's about a money grab. Just the way it is, frankly, with energy taxes that are once again being proposed in this budget. The administration is saying we want to make the tax code simpler and fairer for businesses, level the playing field, and all that rhetoric, except apparently for the oil and gas industry, because the administration would punish them by taking away deductions and credits that lots of other industries get, but only for oil and gas. That's discriminatory treatment. That's the opposite of tax reform.
Yeah, well said. This is another interesting one that you could take me through. The budget savings, where we're talking about the same old controversies, really. And, in fact, you even listed, and it's right, I was counting them up the other day, the budget overview lists 250 what they call cuts, consolidations, and savings proposals that amounts to more than $25 billion. That's in 2014. But what does it really mean?
Well, when you think of these words, cuts, consolidations, and savings, you generally think of programs that are terminated or various spending items that are cut back dramatically. Well, the definition's a little more expansive in the president's budget. Now, we found that there were 159 specific items with a price tag on them that pertain to what are called discretionary programs, the kinds of programs that Congress appropriates money for each year. Well, out of those 159 items, 119 of them are warmed over from last year's budget, and many of them Congress has either rejected or at least failed to consider. So it's not likely that many of those are going to see law and actually start working to save taxpayers' money. Now, if you look on the so-called mandatory side of things, the programs that sort of grow on automatic pilot, well, he's got 21 of those. 9 of them are actual spending reductions, but 12 are revenue increases. So when you do things such as boost revenues, to most people, that's not really considered a savings. That's really just another way the federal government is grabbing more money.
Yeah, no kidding. And here's one that people get very confused on, the so-called Buffett rule. What's happening with that to the wealthy taxpayers?
Oh, goodness. This is really piling on. Now, in the fiscal cliff deal, the Congress and President decided, let's go and have a 39.6% tax rate again, like the way it was in the Clinton era, slightly different income threshold for wealthier Americans. On top of that, we have the 2010 health care law and its surtax. On top of that, we have the fiscal cliff deal's new limits on itemized deductions. That's not enough for this administration. They're now proposing to resurrect the so-called Buffett rule, which is designed to ensure that very wealthy people pay a minimum tax rate. Well, we already have the alternative minimum tax that has barely been kept at bay through these so-called patches, keeping inflation from throwing millions of Americans into the AMT category. The fiscal cliff deal largely fixed that, but I guess now the administration's saying we want another crack and we're going to invent a new kind of minimum tax. That's what this Buffett rule is about, and it's incredibly complicated. The explanation of this, which has been dubbed the fair share tax, is incredible. I was reading the budget about this, and I'll read just one line so you get the flavor. It says, the tentative FST equals 30% of AGI less a charitable credit equals 28% of itemized charitable contributions allowed after the overall limitation on itemized deductions. Does that sound simple to you?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
And it's going to be crazy.
Do you think that, I guess they were just relying on, you've said it several times, and it's true, it's the same old thing. They're just repackaging stuff from previous budgets. So why did the budget come out late anyway? Because they might as well have submitted the same budgets before.
them on Doomsday Preppers. You've seen them on network television, Shipping Wars, and the History Channel. Now, the strongest shelters money can buy are here. Atlas Survival Shelters, made in America from 10-foot diameter galvanized corrugated pipe, up to 11 times stronger than square box shelters, and built to last up to 200 years. And you won't believe the amenities. Atlas shelters contain microwaves, refrigerators, big screen TVs, water tanks, septic systems, bulletproof hatches, and much more. Virtually everything you have at home, just buried 20 feet deep and bomb-proof. See the amazing Atlas Survival Shelters at atlassurvivalshelters.com or call 1-855-4-BUNKER. That's 855-4-B-U-N-K-E-R or atlassurvivalshelters.com. Financing now available. Atlas Survival Shelters. Better prepared than scared.
Great news, Pure Water lovers. BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com has a special discount offer for all GCN listeners. You can't do better than a Big Berkey for economy. For only 1.7 cents a gallon, a single set of filters can last for 5 to 10 years. There's none better than a Big Berkey for emergency preparedness as a backup water source. And you just can't beat a Big Berkey to remove dangerous chlorine, all types of fluoride, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, and unhealthy byproducts from municipal water. Berkey water filter systems are even powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water. For the gold standard in water filters, get a Big Berkey at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. And all GCN listeners get 5% off all ceramic filter systems. For details, call 1-877-99-BERKEY. That's 877-99-BERKEY. Big Berkey water filters, for the love of clean water.
Introducing a 30-day emergency food supply for only $99. At 30dayfoodsupply.com, you can purchase Oregon Trail Foods' one-month supply of high-quality, nutritious, and healthy emergency meals for less than $100. These vegetarian meals are all natural, non-GMO, high in carbs and protein, and are packed with oxygen absorbers in Mylar pouches. They take up to 70% less space than number 10 cans, have a 20-year shelf life, and huge portions, over twice the serving size of some competitors' meals. Oregon Trail Foods and 30dayfoodsupply.com keep prices low by buying direct from producers in Oregon and then pass the savings on to you. Purchase a 30-day, 90-serving emergency food supply for only $99 this month, and $10 ships your entire order to the lower 48. Call 541-673-6666 or visit 30dayfoodsupply.com, where they make preparedness affordable. 30dayfoodsupply.com. Got it? Get it. Go to 30dayfoodsupply.com.
Welcome back to America Tonight. We had him on before. He's terrific. Mark Stevens, an attorney who specializes in DWIs. In fact, if you go to his website, it's byebyedwi.com. Mark, I hope you had a great holiday, and we're glad to have you back on the show.
I sure did, and thanks for having me, Kate. I appreciate it.
Is this traditionally the time when more speed trap kind of things are set? And, I mean, let's be honest, police are looking for more of the kind of drinking and driving thing since it's the summertime, or am I wrong on that?
No, you're not wrong at all. There are certain times throughout the year that their presence is really out there, but the summertime from Memorial Day really right through to Labor Day, they're just out in droves. They get these federal grants to go out and run speed traps or DWI roadblocks, or they're out sniffing for drugs or whatever it is that their particular grant is given for. They're all out there.
I got a question for you. When I was a kid, I was pulled over, and they wanted me to take a sobriety test. I hadn't had anything to drink. What I did was I kind of skidded through a stop sign. You know, we call it California stop. And
sure.
I went through the stop sign. But, of course, I was a kid. I was a nervous wreck. And I did whatever they said, you know, oh, take the test and all that. And, of course, I passed with flying colors because I had nothing to drink. But I got to tell you, I mean, like I said, I was on edge. I was young. And I wondered this, when you get pulled over, maybe you've had just one cocktail or whatever it is it best to just, especially if you're in that situation, is it best to just say, okay, fine, or can you say, no, I'm not taking that?
Well, if you're not under arrest yet, it varies from state to state, too, but here, in most of the states around here, if you are asked to take field sobriety tests prior to your arrest, you can say no. And unless you're a gymnast or, you know, an Olympic figure skater or somebody else that has special, balancing ability. The chances are, unless you're a kid, you're not going to pass it. When you're a kid, you can pass it, you know. You start to gain a little bit of weight, and age and gravity start to work against you. And these tests are difficult for anybody to complete and pass to the cop satisfaction, drunk or sober.
Yeah. Are DWIs, do you think, are they up? It seems like every time I turn around, it's not just the famous people, but it seems to me across the board, and every area is different, but overall, if I were going to generalize, I'd say across the United States, I think it's up. What do you think?
I don't think it's up, actually. I think it's actually down or remaining somewhat consistent. What you see, though, is because of the advent of social media and the rate with which we find things out so quickly on Twitter and Facebook and on the news, is that the cops make a bigger deal out about what they're getting than they used to. So it's kind of a publicity stunt for the cops if they run a roadblock and they arrest two people to say, look, we took these two drunk drivers off the road, when really that's not a great yield for a roadblock with the number of people that they stop. So they're arresting about the same number of people, at least in our state, every year. And they kind of spin that, well, look, that just means that people are getting the message and the number's going down, or people aren't getting the message and it's going up, whichever way they want the number to work for them to get more federal grants.
Yeah. You know, people automatically assume when they hear about, oh, so-and-so was pulled over for DWI, you can't help it. It's odd because we live in a country where innocent until proven guilty, but I think people think, oh, guilty. So I wonder, when you're in court, what do you tell your clients? What do you tell them when you're trying to get the facts from them? What are the things that you're looking for to clear them, to see, you know, to get some of the skinny on what happened in the situation?
This is one of these, it's an interesting way to put it. This is one of these crimes, there's only a couple of them, these and sex offenses, where really, although the Constitution says the burden is on the state to prove them, it's really on us to prove, that, in practical terms, to prove that they're not guilty. So either through effective cross-examination of the cops or trying to destroy the state's case or putting on a case of our own, it's really on us, because there is that presumption of, well, they drank, they drove, they crossed a line, whatever it is that they did wrong, that they're guilty, and we need to show that they're not, which is a shame, but it is what it is.
Yeah, that's what I think. That's why I asked that question. Do you feel like more people are getting cleared? That if you have a decent attorney and you can find the, I don't want to call them loopholes, but you can find that there's holes in the evidence or that kind of thing, are we seeing more of that maybe?
I think what we're seeing more people get cleared because of more videotapes. In the past, it was just the cop's word against the client's word, or maybe just the cop's word, and, you know, people would tend to believe cops. Now, you look at a videotape and you hear the cop describe the speech is slurred and the balance is bad, and then you listen to it and watch it and say, is this the same person you were just talking about? They tend to embellish and overstate what clues of impairment that they see. So if you can look at something, no matter what a cop describes it as, and you look at it and say, that person looks pretty sober to me, they've got a much greater chance of acquittal. Unfortunately, not all police departments videotape.
Yeah, that's starting to become more common. But then again, with budgetary cuts and everything, sometimes that's one of the first things to go, even though it's been on the list. So it just
Well, that's
depends.
What they say, but they've got these other kind of junky toys, you know, the little preliminary breath testers that aren't really admissible in court. You know, they've always got new tasers, you know. But if you really wanted to find out, if you wanted the jurors or you wanted the judge to know what happened out there, you would have a truth box in your cruiser, and it would be videotaping and audio recording what happened.
Yeah.
And that's the best evidence there is.
Yeah, good point. Of all the kinds of things that go to court, because litigation overall in some ways is down, there's a lot of settling before you go to court, but in your area, is that the same thing? Is there more settling, or is it, or no, it's, you know, you're appearing in court and then we go from there?
Not on a DWI, there's not. Most cases tend to settle because there's this specter of jail, these other crimes, you know, if it's an assault or a drug case or whatever, the person has this, you know, fear of going to jail, and maybe that can be settled and resolved in a way that everyone can live with it. With a DWI, though, really, few people are willing to put their neck out and sign off on a charge reduction. So the person is usually left with little choice but to fight it.
So you end up fighting
because everybody's afraid to read about themselves giving someone a break that goes out and mows somebody down or something. You know, that's a self-protection thing with the state. They don't want to give someone a break in the event that there's not a one-time occurrence. But in some cases, you know, the cases are so weak that they might think about that.
Yeah. Would you rather be before a judge or a jury, or it depends on the facts of the case?
It depends on the judge. It depends on the facts, too. There are some, you know, technical defenses that you would rather put in front of a judge. You know, if you're arguing over whether a road was a public way, for instance, or, you know, whether the keys being close to the ignition but not in it constitutes operation, but the person is clearly drunk. That might be something you want to do in front of a judge. But as far as the, the classic battle of is this person intoxicated or not, generally you'd want a jury for that.
Okay, generally a jury. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, because you you think about it, and the 6 or 12 people in the box there can listen to this and say, wait a minute, you know, that doesn't sound so bad, and that could be me, or that could be my kid, or that could be somebody else sitting over there next to the defense lawyer.
Do you find that, I know in some cases, certainly when we're talking about big-time criminal cases, this will happen, but there is a lot of mock juries, a lot of that kind of stuff. Jury consulting is big, depending on the case. Do you find, I mean, all the years that you've done this, do you have a gut feeling? Do you get good at the times that you have to have a jury? Do you get good at reading a jury and how they feel about alcohol and driving and all those kinds of things?
Well, you know, we try to present questions to them that, you know, will flush out a bias. But if somebody's got a real bias, a real agenda, they're going to get seated in the jury box. If there's somebody that just hates people who drink or whatever, they're going to be quiet through the questioning and get themselves into the box. But really, I know different people have different ways of doing it. I know a lawyer who just takes the first 12 that get picked and doesn't object to any. I tend to review the questionnaires very carefully because I just obsess over it and hoping you don't let the wrong person in there. You know, and you look for little things that they write on their questionnaire and so forth. Have they had experience with drunk driving of their own? Have they had a family member who was hurt? That kind of stuff. But it's not a science. It's people, you know. So
yeah, absolutely. It's people. I love what you said that. Are you finding that in the cases, are you, I guess it's probably demographics across the board, but is there a particular, your phone rings more in one direction than the other? I mean, younger people, older people, women, men, or nah?
Ours is a mix. It's we do try and measure the demographics. It tends to be more male than female slightly. Age-wise, it's across the board. It's 16 to, you know, into their 80s, as long as you can drive.
yeah. There you go. And I bet the younger they are and the older they are, the more maybe worried they are, I would think.
Yeah, the more worried they are, you know, the older they are, too, the less likely they're going to be able to pass field sobriety tests, the more likely they are to give statements to the police because they tend to trust them a little bit more than, you know, than a younger person would has grown up watching cop videos on TV, on the news, and seeing different things. You know, they tend to tell the cops what kind of medications they take, which is a really bad thing to do. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday thing and showing the cop what you take is not a good idea.
Yeah, so you tell people that. You say, listen, I mean, this is some good advice to people listening. Don't say anything, right? Wait until you have your attorney.
That's right. That's right. Ask to speak to a lawyer right away. Don't make any statements that would hurt yourself. As I like to say to people very simply, lawyer up and shut up.
I like that. Perfect way to end this. Mark Stevens, thanks so much. Check him out at byebyedwi.com. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Kate.
Are you still a traditional smoker? Now experience a new lifestyle and try vaping with e-cigarettes by LeCig. Imagine no ashes, stains, nasty smell, or coughing and hacking. With LeCig e-cigarettes' revolutionary microelectronic technology, rechargeable battery, and unique replaceable cartridge, you'll get all the benefits and satisfaction of smoking without the hazards. Choose your taste from a wide variety of our new American-made Vaporeon e-liquids at LeCig.com. And LeCig smokes the competition. mission by serving thousands of worldwide customers with real people customer service, fast, free, same-day shipping, and a 30-day warranty and satisfaction guarantee. So are you ready for a new vaping lifestyle? Then call 870-518-4307. That's 870-518-4307. Or visit LeSig.com, spelled L-E-C-I-G.com. LeSig e-cigarettes for today's modern smoker.